Welcome, Red Eyes members. Thank you very much for tuning in. It's great to have you along with us. We are continuing our conversation with Kurt Lindahl from survivalcell.blogspot.com about geomancy ley lines. We've talked a little bit about the Egyptians, their possible possible origins of the longitudes, the latitudes. We've talked about the Baalbek hexagon and much more, how different cities, historical cities and sites, and even future things that are being built up in Kazakhstan and so forth, are in some way have a relationship to this Baalbek hexagon. And in this segment here, we primarily are going to talk about the Vatican, how that relates to other sites, other cities, and so forth. But before we go there, Kurt, I want to ask you a little bit about the hexagonal geometrical shape. You mentioned that that's interesting in itself. Do you think that has some value in regards to the Star of David, or why do you think the hexagonal shape have been used so prominently?
Well, you can certainly, it's composed of triangles, and you can make that a lot of those sacred geometrical shapes out of it. And to me, it's interesting from the standpoint that it could be used for a grid like latitude and longitude was.
That's right.
So that shape, obviously, in the occult, we always hear, you know, I'm going to put a hex on you or this and that. So there's that kind of association, too, when you think of it in terms of the way that's used. So the hexagonal shape is interesting and usable and measurable, just like a square is.
Yeah.
So it could have been one of the secrets I keep referring to. It does seem like navigation and mapping were kind of concealed arts to some degree, and the use of these shapes to map and navigate things can be used practically. So it's possible through these associations that they gained occult meaning because they want to scare the average person away from knowing about these.
Yes.
Or convincing you that you can't understand it, etc. Yeah, I've seen this in work personally. I have done some work as an archaeologist, and the guy who's running the transit, mm-hmm. you know, who's measuring the digging and everything, always is very territorial of that skill and everything, and reluctant to show others. And I think surveyors are like that too. If you look, you know, in the United States at least, it takes an apprenticeship of many years just to become a qualified surveyor.
Hmm.
So there's still remnants of this protection of that craft.
Yeah, that's right.
Going on.
Interesting. And then, you know, you mentioned, of course, the obviously the square, you know, as the foot of the pyramid, so to speak, being a square. But then we have some other patterns and geometrical shapes as well. Have you encountered the octagonal shape, anything at all, or relayed this when you looked at different city alignments or something like that?
Yes, I have in some of the monuments and everything, and it's interesting that you brought that up because the website I was looking at of the National Museum of Architecture of the United States is called the Octagon.
Oh, really? No.
Yeah, you can look that up online. If you word search that, you can find it, and most notably, I think that the monument that comes to mind that has the octagonal shape is the International Peace Garden. And that's right on the border of the United States and Canada, and it's oriented with that. It's a linear park, just like many of the National Mall. And this is one of the talismans there includes pieces of the World Trade Center.
Oh, really? No.
Yes. And I think that's just an odd juxtaposition, putting something like that in a place called the Peace Garden.
Isn't
to me,
it
doesn't,
yeah.
It doesn't fit. You know? So I think this is a talismanic addition to that park.
Yeah.
And there is an octagonal fountain in the park that I vectored lines from, and one of them goes very close to the Georgia Guidestones.
Yes.
But it actually goes more where we discussed the plastic coffins before. It goes right over those and then goes to Jekyll Island in Florida, in Georgia, where their meeting was to plan the dissolution of the Federal Reserve as it used to be and install it as it is today.
Yes.
So there's some interesting things with that. One of the other facets vectors aligned to Hoover Dam near Las Vegas, which was built. This park was built in 1932, so it was near the time of FDR, and the same period of the span of construction of Hoover Dam. And there are some things I'm reading about Hoover Dam itself that has astro-archaeonomic features built into it that record its date of construction.
Okay.
And that's on the web too. Everybody can look up and learn about that too. If you just enter Hoover Dam and astrology, I think you'll get some hits on that, and you can see that that's an interesting subject also. And not the least a compelling thing about the International Peace Garden is that there's a cement tower there that's composed of really two towers, but it's very similar in form and appearance to the Georgia Guidestone.
Yes.
And it was built the same year.
Hmm.
And though that was just out and out, the Masons of North Dakota claimed to, you know, that they built that as an addition to the park.
There you go.
So that's kind of, raises to some flags.
Yeah, it certainly does. I'm looking at it right now. It looks, because again, when you mentioned that octagonal shape and parts of the remains of the World Trade Center that they are there, I know that the new tower that they're building called the Freedom Tower will actually, if you would look at that from above, you actually would have the same octagonal shape, but basically because the design of it is basically two towers merge into one, but they're slightly offset. So if you look at it from above, it actually is going to create an octagonal shape. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, I didn't. And they're sneaking that one in there, aren't they?
They definitely are, yeah.
And that's also the logo of Chase Bank.
Oh, that's right.
The octagon with those lines spinning, radiating off of it.
Yeah.
So that was interesting to me when I began to learn, what was going on here.
Yeah.
That you see associations like that. I mean, that's one of the things that we learn online from Michael Tesarion and other people about the corporate logos and things like that.
Absolutely.
So when you start to look deeper, you pick things out.
Absolutely, and that's what it's about. Discovering this stuff, discovering the occult language, so to speak, and see how it tries to put hex on us. But I think that we dissolve that hex when we begin to become aware of it and know what's going on in that sense and spread the word about it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, Michael opened my eyes to even that one of my favorite rock bands, the Grateful Dead.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how did I not see that for years?
Yeah, that's right.
All of the imagery there and everything, not that I don't enjoy the music or whatever, but it's, if you see, like every album cover, there's pyramid skeletons and members of the band rumored to be members of the Bohemian Club.
Well, so I've heard, exactly. They've, some of them are frequent guests at that gathering, so it's kind of interesting. And again, I think there are a lot of people are involved in the work of a band like that have a huge audience. You know, they take that as a chance to put in some of this occult, iconography or artwork or in some other way in order to try to, who knows really what the purpose is and why they really are doing it, but in some way they're using bands and big names and celebrities as a form of kind of disseminating all this. That's my take on it anyway.
I agree, and it seems to have been done right under our noses for years and years.
Yes, that's right.
But I mean, with no hint of it, unless you become aware of looking at things like that. And it's here in the United States too that they've kind of made that a joke, though. If you even accuse or suggest that is going on, it's gotten to the point where I'm sure people, when they hear me saying this, what I've just said about the Grateful Dead, they're going to snicker and laugh and associate me with conservative Christians and everything.
Well, that's their judgment. For those who have the eyes to see, they can simply look at the album art for themselves, and they can look up the fact that some of the members are hanging out at the Bohemian Grove. But again, I mean, what can be said on top of that, at least from my perspective, is that a symbol, a shape, or a structure in itself isn't inherently negative or hold any kind of evil connotation. But It's depending on what the use for it is. Is it to, you know, target people on a subliminal level in order to sell more albums, or what's the reason for it? What's your take on that, Kurt? Do you think that the symbol in itself actually is neutral, but it's depending on the intention of the person who is creating or designing it?
Well, I agree with you totally, and you can apply that concept to the alignments and monuments themselves.
Yes.
And we all appreciate art and sculpture and the beauty and symmetry of what we're seeing. But if the people that created it dedicated a ceremony and add talismans to it that are detrimental for all of us, whether we believe it or not, that's there. The spirit of what they're doing is there. And that's terrible. And that, I want to say that, too. A lot of the things I see in the occult, the so-called occult or the dark side of it, is just people manipulating people.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you might have something happen to you that people plan that you have no idea. And if you're superstitious, you attribute it to things like this. There's all kinds of layers of that going on in this world, you know, when you see it happening. And it's if you're aware of it, you're one step up on everything.
That's right. Absolutely. Why don't we talk a little bit about the Vatican then, Kurt?
Sure.
How did you approach this, or how did you stumble over it? Did you just do it for fun, or was this a connection from some other line that intersected through the Vatican? Tell us about it.
No. Obviously, this is one of the most famous spots in the world.
Yes.
The Vatican, it's its own country there within Italy, and the St. Peter's Square, people call it somehow when it's not square, but it's just one of the most famous sites to everybody. When you see pictures of Italy, that's what you see. We have the recent movie, The Angels and Demons, that took place mostly there.
That's
so it's
right.
Just an icon, obviously, of their faith, you know.
Yeah.
And it was, since I started looking into geomancy and studying all this, it's been right in the back of my mind, because what a more classic linear array. And I wrote a story about Burning Man earlier on, that the shape of Burning Man reminded me of the St. Peter's there, the Axis Mundi, which is what it is. It has the shape of the Labarum over the square there, and it's kind of crescent shaped if you look at it. And then the plaza out in front of it seems to stretch out in front of it at about 88 degrees, an 88 degree bearing. Using the line tool there on Google Earth. So, I mean, my immediate observation was, gee whiz, look at that. It's just almost straight to the east of there. I never realized that before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Istanbul is just almost straight east of Rome, a little south. You can see that by looking on Google Earth. And the direction of the plaza seems to vector right into the vicinity of the Hagia Saint Sophia, or the former seat of the Eastern Roman Church.
Oh, that's right.
So what more of a symbolic, you know, the gesture of just linking the two branches of the empire and church.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating, too, is that it points also to the spring equinox.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is suggestive of that it was there, or has some meaning beyond any Christian meaning. I mean, was this array there? I don't know enough about the history. I'm still looking into that, but it points to the city, you know, prior to Christianity, I'm thinking.
Absolutely.
I mean, this association existed, obviously, because the cities existed long before Christianity was in Rome. So.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And, I think there was a lot of, you know, more ancient religions there. There have been discoveries underneath Rome that has been made in regards to, I think, Mithraism primarily. But again, the whole, what's that called again, with Romulus and Remus, that religion, whichever that was dedicated to Saturnalia, has a connection there as well. But I think that primarily...
Right, the pantheon, the multi-polytheistic beliefs of Rome.
Yes.
Prior to Christianity, yeah.
And then you have this interesting connection of who built, of course, many of the structures around St. Peter's the church and
right,
so forth,
right.
And the Bernini and I think Caravaggio was a few of those two men who were fighting to get the contract, so to speak, on what to build there around there. I think Bernini was the one who got to design the piazza pretty much and the colonnades around.
He did design that part. I think Michelangelo planned the design of it, and then he you're right, the periphery he constructed and built.
Yeah,
and the design.
And they've updated this as well. You know, they've made changes to it. You know, up towards into the 1600s, something like that, and which means that they could later on have redesigned things in order to make it align with other cities or monuments as well. You know, so this is a work in progress as well. It isn't like they just laid it down and then
is
forever. You know,
the Axis Mundi or the design of the Labarum there on the square creates a siding device.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that vectors lines out there in I believe, and creates an octagon shape also, or is capable of doing so.
Mm-hmm.
So it's similar, just the rays from that could represent different directions also. I haven't checked those yet, but I'm sure they can. And also those can be, I believe, I can't speak to this for sure, they may mark other solar events also.
Could be some kind of calendrical system or something there.
Yeah, it's easy for a lot of these monuments that they do provide, you know, references that you can use to observe the stars and the moon and everything.
Yes.
That's another purpose, I'm sure, that they must have been used for. Some of them are oriented to significant events, and some of them I'm trying to figure out. The ones that point east to west are a little easier to figure out a possible meaning for, so I'm still learning about that. A little bit.
So you mentioned, it's been mentioned that the Vatican from above looks like a key, for instance. You have different versions of that, or a keyhole, rather. There's a key in there as well. There are different discoveries being made all the time of the significance of the site and its alignment and so forth. But is there anything else that it lines up with that you've been able to see?
Well, one interesting byproduct was one of these pyramids there in Montenegro. That this man, like in the Balkans there, that this gentleman thinks is man-made.
Yes.
The pyramidal-shaped hills was right in the alignment.
Is that, are talking about the Bosnian pyramids now? Or
yeah, that's it. I don't have the screen up with that on either, but it is on the alignment.
That's interesting.
On that alignment. And I noticed it was odd because I marked that previously. And then I vectored out the line, and I noticed it was in the alignment. So maybe he would be happy to hear that.
I think he would, yeah, exactly.
That it's on his alignment, yeah. That's a really interesting thing. Some of the things I've seen about that do look like it was constructed, at least in part.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of other things that seem to be being exposed lately, too. I mean, a lot of these dolmens and mounds and stuff that were added to mountains and natural features.
Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, you see places like Nemrudag there in Turkey. That to me, that's an interesting place. It falls within the 38th longitude and latitude, not right exactly in any part of it, but the Persian king, I think it was Darius, I might be wrong there, but he constructed this basically memorial to several different gods from different cultures,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of, you know, that's like a Masonic kind of a theme there, appreciating the different religions for what they are and venerating them. And I mean, he respected this, obviously, or he wouldn't have put the four different religions he had there. I think he had the Greek or Macedonian religion, the Persian one, and Babylonian. And there are some other deity there, too, that I can't remember right off the top.
Mm.
But there's also just a big dolmen or burial mound up on top of this mountain. And if you look at the mountain from Google Earth, it's even serpentine-shaped. It has a unique look to it, too, like it might have been selected for that reason.
Mm.
That's just a compelling out-of-the-way site there in Turkey that seems to be keep popping up near a lot of lines I have. Like the Jefferson ley line that comes over from the alignment of DC goes right near there.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, by the way, intersects with the northern, right near the northern edge of the hexagonal shape I drew extending from Baalbek. So I was, when I saw that happen, I was like, oh my goodness. Maybe did. He seemed to be aware of that whole plan.
Yeah.
The way he designed the city was such a similar spatial arrangement that created a 45-degree angle, just like the one between the pyramids and Baalbek.
Right, right.
And if you measured along that, too, it at approximately 100 miles, you would get an even line of latitude, too, because he oriented Monticello right evenly at the 38th parallel.
38?
Yeah, right at there in the United States at the 38th parallel, which is interesting, too, because the beginning period of construction of his home Monticello, Mason and Dixon were still in the United States.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
So this is part of the chronology that I've laid out, too, of that happening, of how it, in relation to my theory about Rose Hill being the basal datum for D.C.,
yeah,
that I stumbled upon that it seemed like Thomas Jefferson was aware of this association between, maybe, possibly, between Baalbek and the pyramids. And this could be a Masonic secret or one of these tenets that's, you know, maybe was discovered in the Temple of Solomon. Who knows? And it just seems like he was aware.
So this is Monticello.
I can't say for sure. Go ahead.
So this is Monticello that you're talking about, or Monticello. What, and maybe we can, is there any kind of alignment in regards to equinoxes or Easter as well here then? Or do you think that there have been certain monuments or certain buildings have been built at a specific time to line up with the sun at specific points in time? Do you think that could be the case?
I think that's entirely possible. I wouldn't put it past Thomas Jefferson to align his house with some astrological event. I know that if you measure the long axis of his house and turn it 90 degrees, it vectors a line right to Rose Hill, Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what's contributed, you know, to his house kind of points at 157 or whatever the back angle of that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you subtract 90, you get 67 degrees. I measured it at 66 degrees. But it goes really, really close to Rose Hill, Maryland, and it seems to face that way. But it does not line up with anything that I can figure as of yet.
Hmm.
Still learning about all that and trying to get it straight. So
figure it out, yeah. Rose Hill, another interesting, connects possibly with the Rose line, or at least those over in the States have chosen their own Rose alignment, so to speak. It seems like this, the Rose is coming up all the time in relationship to occult knowledge, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. And no more obvious a place than there. And that I didn't even, at the point I started looking at Rose Hill, I hadn't associated it with anything else yet until I began to discover that it was the estate of Gustavus Brown, who was George Washington's personal physician.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
And it was very close to Mount Vernon and everything. So it seems like there's some value of it. The estate does lie due south of the city limits of Washington, D.C., which are basically a 10-mile square that's rotated 90 degrees to make a big diamond shape.
Hmm.
These were the original city limits. The city doesn't look like that now. Only kind of the northern part of it is left now. But when the city was originally designed, it was a 10-mile diamond-shaped.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the markers are still there, you know, for the original, many of them for the original city limits. So Rose Hill, there's a little high point on the property just to the west of the actual house of Rose Hill, Maryland, where it looks like you can see the city. I did read an account there of the city being viewed from there.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
Yeah, it's a high point south of the city,
right,
which is rare. The higher areas are to the maybe the southwest, or the more of a higher view to the north in the northwest there.
if we talked briefly last time you were on the program about Williamsburg, not too much though, but this time you have another image up on your blog about what you call the Enki staff. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a misnomer. What I'm referring to there is William Henry's concept of the Meru Pillar.
Right. Okay.
He's defined the Nashville Bicentennial Mall there and written a lot about that. And I started obviously noticing similarities in a lot of the plazas that I was looking at, you know, to the concepts that he was saying. And it seems like that is what I'm finding out. Williamsburg was originally laid out this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when they developed Williamsburg, at first the capital was in Jamestown, Virginia, and they moved it to Williamsburg after a while, and soon after that William and Mary was established, the College of William and Mary. So the College of William and Mary has a building built by Christopher Wren, or designed by Christopher Wren, who is a famous Masonic architect from England.
Mm-hmm.
And the campus of William and Mary and the layout of the way the town of Williamsburg is creates this plaza with the colonial capital at the eastern end and the campus of William and Mary at the western end. And then there's a linear array between them. And this was the original setup. And then over the years it got changed and things were built, routes of streets were altered and things like this, but later the Rockefellers, when they got involved in the 30s, and here we are again right around the time of the International Peace Garden and the dissolving of the Federal Reserve and issues like this going on in American history.
Yeah.
When he funds the total refurbishment and, you know, reconstruction of Williamsburg back to this format and layout. So he seems to have some interest in it being returned to the way it was before. And it, you know, it's events like this that start to lend credence to what I'm saying. You know, you see people like this going to great lengths, really.
Yes, yes.
To build these arrays and lots of money that you would think they're for more than symbolic reasons or anything. But even if that's just the case, this is a really important symbol.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's something to it. And there's a lot of lore in Williamsburg about a hidden vault that Francis Bacon left.
Okay, really? I haven't heard about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to work in Virginia, and it's funny, I've even worked in Williamsburg.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I worked there in the early 90s, I actually saw the hole that was dug of somebody trying to find what's called the Bruton Parish Vault.
Bruton Parish Vault, okay.
Hmm. Yeah, you can Google that too, and I actually have a link to a book I'll send you. That's the whole book is online. It's about this whole subject.
Interesting. Hmm.
Yeah, and so there a lot of people who study Gnostic wisdom obviously believe that Francis Bacon was actually behind the establishing of the Jamestown Company, which was the Virginia colony, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so this legend developed among the locals in Williamsburg, and there's even documentation from local women who are deceased now, but wrote that there were tunnels.
Underground tunnels?
Under the streets of Williamsburg, and that there was a secret vault. And actually, part of the legends are that FDR came to visit the vault, and he was the last one to ever see the contents of the vault, and it was sealed and everything. And it was supposedly in this churchyard, the Bruton Parish Church, there in Williamsburg. And so that lends to all the fascination, too. And now the local lore is that Rockefeller knows where it is, and no one's seen it since. And this is part of his motivation for having, you know, obviously this all could be legend and everything and just the locals talking, but this is go into Williamsburg and dig into it, somebody will tell you this story inevitably.
Well, there's always, I think, some credence in those old stories. And again, I think that they're, this idea about underground tunnels, especially under cities, has been thoroughly kind of documented by now that a lot of the important cities have some kind of communication system underground, and primarily I think that at least on the official level, the reason for this is for in case of breakout of war, we need escape routes or communication between buildings and so forth. But I think this is very much established, like the under Paris you have the catacombs. London has an underground system as well. So I definitely think that there's some truth to that, of course.
Well, it's interesting in the context too of like every major university town in America has legends about tunnels being under the campuses, and of course, all these universities have geomantic layouts and they're laid out in quadrangles, and obviously some geomancy going on in the education system.
Oh yeah,
be it symbolic or not, because everywhere you go, the universities are laid out like this, starting with William and Mary. I think William and Mary, if not for a change in location, would probably be considered the oldest college in America.
Okay, really?
With Harvard being considered the oldest, because in Virginia they had some difficulties with the Native Americans. We didn't like them being there.
Yeah.
Obviously, so they had several confrontations with them in the early days, and they had the college situated near where Richmond, Virginia is today, and they had some issues with Native Americans, so they moved it to Williamsburg.
Okay, there we go.
So if not for that fact, William and Mary would be the oldest college in America.
That's interesting, and I think that a lot of this knowledge was kind of, a lot of the professors were, many other people who were developing this knowledge. They were hanging out at the university, so I think that they would themselves experimenting when they were building them up and so forth, that okay, let's align it in these ways and in these manners and kind of as a way of experimenting with it and see if it actually has effect or not, you know.
Well, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson learned how to survey at William and Mary.
Yeah.
George Washington never graduated from William and Mary, but he did get his surveying credentials there, and I believe he was later even a chancellor of William and Mary. But obviously Thomas Jefferson's a famous alumni of William and Mary, and he was an interesting thing about William and Mary. Another interesting thing is the creation of the Phi Beta Kappa academic Greek organization. Yeah, that was formed there at William and Mary, and everything I read about it said that the 10 original members of Phi Beta Kappa were all Freemasons, and that the organization was formed in a tavern just off of the campus of William and Mary in 1775.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting few years there of 1775 and 1776. You see like the rumored formation of the Illuminati. There's all of these Illuminist and Masonic things that are going on in that time frame.
Yeah, and then I'm reading here a little bit about the College of William and Mary, and says the Rockefellers are involved again here, because when they wanted to restore it to the 18th century appearance between 1928 and 1932, they got the financial support from John D. Rockefeller primarily.
Right,
and his wife Aldrich Rockefeller to restore it to its original design, you know. So they're involved again, and then Queen Elizabeth again was over there with Prince Philip in 1957. It says here, so that's quite interesting, actually.
Yeah, that William and Mary is just and Williamsburg itself and that whole part of Virginia is just full of interesting stories and like Williamsburg itself was the colonial capital for a long time of basically what was the entire East Coast to Ohio prior to the formation of the other colonies and everything. So originally almost all of that was considered Virginia or part of the quote Old Dominion, as they call it. But Williamsburg, one of the interesting things excavated and found at Williamsburg was the Williamsburg Gallows.
Okay.
And this was interesting because they were found by accident when they were looking for a gas line, but the remains were found of just the post holes, what were left, but they correlated it with pictures of the actual, like, drawings and artist renderings of hangings, which were apparently were somewhat of a social event in the day.
Yeah, really?
Because all of the illustrations showed people drinking wine and eating turkey legs and stuff like that, and that's sure as heck, that's some of the stuff the archaeologists were coming up with there.
God.
But what was interesting, though, was like Blackbeard's crew was hung there.
Oh, really?
Blackbeard the pirate. Yeah, they captured him off of the Outer Banks there in North Carolina, and Williamsburg being the capital, they executed him on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
But they brought his crew back for trial to Williamsburg. And after they were condemned, they were hung there at the Williamsburg gallows. And just as an interesting aside, the gallows themselves from plan view were triangular. 11 feet on a side,
mm-hmm.
which equals what number?
Run that by me again.
33.
There's 11. All right.
Yeah.
There you go.
So
okay.
It was a triangular structure from plan view with 11 feet on a side. So even that to me has some sort of meaning these days.
Well, okay. Yeah. I zoned out there for a while while we were talking about that because I was thinking about this idea that what potential. The hangings of people and so forth on these sites, if that also this is something I've heard, you know, again, people have talked
it's
about.
Possible.
Yeah, and also what, how that, how shall we put it, how that feeds into a ley line or a geomantic system that when you have rituals, so to speak, killings at these spots, much in a similar way, the theory about Jack the Ripper, for instance, that he was performing the murders in a specific geographical pattern, a pentagonal shape and so forth.
Sure, sure. It seems like there's ritual and all of that involved in almost everything that's done if you're an adherent of this belief.
Yes.
So that the whole thing seems to be, you know, if you're a practitioner of this, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we see people in our lives who, you know, read the tarot, or practice the I Ching or some sort of divination device or read their horoscope and that's just part of the fabric of what we do. But when you imagine people, I keep coming back to this, whether it's real or not, they think it is.
Sure, yeah.
And they behave and go through their lives and treat everybody else as if they have this power.
Hmm.
So that to me is damaging and not good. And the whole exclusive manipulative things involved in it. It seems like all of it is based on a small group of people taking advantage of a larger people, whether in form or spirit.
Yeah.
And it just seems wrong. I don't know. To me, it just, I don't know.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
Imagine putting a spell on somebody and hoping that something bad happens to them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Just, even from a Hollywood perspective, it just seems bad.
Well, of course it does. Absolutely, I agree with you. And again, what is the purpose for this? Why are they doing this? What is the interest in this, and what do they gain from it? I mean, again, I go back to that idea that it might be just in a way kind of a philosophical idea or a religious idea which connects with occult activities, obviously. But it feels to me again that they wouldn't go to the length of producing all this stuff and doing potentially even ritual murders at some of these sites if it didn't in some way kind of benefit them, if you know what I mean, meaning that they have tapped into some kind of energy or a force, so to speak, that benefits their agenda when they do it. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, it's hard to say. There's a lot of evidence pointing that way through history that kind of activity could happen or that it might be part of them sensing that they need to be have power, like we examined maybe the Aztecs or something like that, where they're always accused of having the human sacrifices just for some reason that the crops weren't good or it wouldn't rain or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So but then it was interesting, we were talking about Conspiracy Con when I was speaking to you before the show.
Yes.
And I saw Russell Means speak there. And he touched on a little bit of the control issues and stuff like that. And it's just the way that Native Americans looked at all of this, it seemed to be for everybody. I mean, he didn't come out and say this, but what he was saying to me, when I was listening to him, suggested this to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just seems like to them, it wasn't an exclusive control thing, at least a lot of them, that they didn't, rationalize what they were doing with their pyramids maybe as much as people are today, or trying to manipulate people or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he also suggested, too, in the Native Americans' defense, that they were possibly doing some medical, surgical kind of things, mm-hmm. and not sacrificing people. So that's another valid point of view there.
Sure, sure. That's true.
So there's still a lot we don't know about that, but you're right. It is scary to think that people would be setting up entire, linear arrangements of things just to take advantage of people, much less sacrifice them to get some power from that somehow.
Yeah. I think there is a whole article about the 33rd parallel on redhousecreations.com, which a little bit goes into this idea as well, that even prisons and certain where they do certain executions actually are on the 33rd parallel, and that they have different buildings in relationship to this, security prisons, and much of this stuff is going on as well, which is, again, it gives credence to this idea that in some way, by ritually killing people at certain places in certain spots, it feeds the system for whatever reason or however that works, that I don't know. But again, the belief seems to be there, and people can shake it out. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah, how do you get to that point where
yeah.
that's okay to do?
I
don't see it, and none of us. It just seems so bizarre and something out of a horror movie.
Yeah, I know
that could be true, but I think you're right. There's a lot of the things that could even make a really rational thinking person look at that and worry a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
Court, is there if we go back a little bit more, maybe begin to round things up here in relationship to what we've talked about here today and the Vatican and so forth. Is there anything more that you can say in relation to the Vatican, or what that connects with, or if you have any other ideas or theories when you're looking at the Vatican, for instance? Do you think that's a central point in regards to control, and that's why the Vatican is linked up with other places, or do you have any other ideas or theories that you want to share with us?
Yeah, certainly. I think even prior to the advent of Christianity, like we were saying before, that had to have been a point of value. The Caesars, administrators of Rome, I'm not totally up on the civic history of Rome, so I don't know always what has existed in that point. But we know it's the city of seven hills. That's another theme that seems to be repeated. I think David Icke has brought this up in a lot of things he talks about, how a lot of the cities that seem to be players on a larger scale in this kind of game, if you will, are the cities of the seven hills.
Yes, indeed.
And Lisbon, Portugal, being one of those also.
Hmm.
Which I did look into a little bit more since our last conversation, not to dodge the Rome question, but yeah, Rome is very, very important, and obviously a large, huge segment of our world's population is Roman Catholic and looks to Rome for moral invective and political guidance.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So it's very important to the whole world. And if something like that, that's interesting that you bring this up too, because like organized religion seem to value this too.
Yeah,
and it kind of be secret, not a told. Nobody. Why is the church domed?
Yeah,
because it looks nice. I mean, that's what we're always told. But right. They're all like this. They all have the geomantic arrangements, and they're hopefully using this. For what they consider good, obviously, and non-manipulative, but do they view it that way too, I wonder?
Yeah.
It's easy to look at organized Christianity too and criticize it too, but I mean, at least we know they have a tradition of at least wanting to try to do the right thing.
Well, I think the people are dedicated to on the outside to the religion have, but the question is if the leaders have. I think that they've again hijacked that message and hijacked that energy, so to speak, of good mm-hmm. intention from people, but the leadership of the church has become, you know, corrupt in that way. That's my point of view at this point, at least.
Sure, and that just points out that, like, my biggest fear of it all is the manipulation and everything. If you do have an irresponsible person, much less an outright evil person who has wormed their way into the control or some influence there, and that's the way a lot of these secret societies work.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to educate everybody about that. There's lots of information out there. I mean, everybody, all of these small exclusive societies that don't really make any bones about it, that they have people, you know, planted in places and they've developed relationships and everything. That's how it works.
That's how it works.
That's the whole concept of it, of those secret societies.
Of course. What you mentioned briefly there, Lisp. What else? Is there something you want to mention about that? Did you find something more in relation to Lisbon in Portugal?
Well, it's a really beautiful, geomantically laid out city. I mean, even just from Google Earth, if you look at Lisbon, it just looks like a beautiful, clean, sunny place. Mm-hmm. and the Hieronymus Monastery there that you pointed out to me last time is just, boy, it has a beautiful gardens that are laid out in geometric patterns and seem to point line. And it is just a little bit north of what I've defined as the Lisbon Rose Line, but it's close enough to include in the alignment, I think.
Yeah.
And there's lots of other parks in town there. If you go into the city of Lisbon proper, a little bit east of the Hieronymus Monastery there, they have a big plaza that's kind of oriented north, west, southeast. And it's just, it's a structure that would equal any of the ones you see in other capitals of the world. And the linear, Meru staff array kind of thing, as William Henry would term it.
Yeah.
Lisbon is part of it. And also I was looking at Fatima, Portugal, just briefly and discovered it was really close to the latitude of the Mason-Dixon line.
Okay, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, and that Mason-Dixon line is turning out just to get more interesting all the time, because I also realized that Mount Ararat was at that same latitude.
Hmm. Very, very interesting. So there's a relationship, a grid pattern. Have you ever heard about the work of Carl Monk? He wrote, I think, a book and produced a DVD called The Code, I think.
No, I think I've heard his name before. There was another gentleman that emailed me, but his name was Monkman. He did some work in England that was similar to what I'm looking at. And he emailed me, but no. What? Please inform me.
That was just primarily more ancient megalithic sites, pretty much, that he tracked and developed, realized that there is a relationship between these sites as well, and developed another grid pattern. What you're doing, though, it seems like, is you're adding more modern sites into that as well, but that could potentially be something to check up. I think that he has some of those videos up on Video Google. I can send you those if they indeed are up there, and potentially as another source of looking into it, or rather verifying some of your work, or, you know, it's always good with cross-reference forth, you know.
So I will check him out, and it's always interesting to see what everybody else is doing, because it is easy to make associations, but to see other people's point of view about why they think it's related and issues like that are fascinating to see. And sometimes you see things that you already looked at.
Absolutely.
But yeah. I've just started looking at the more modern things too. I mean, I was actually shocked when I started to realize that, you know, I've studied art history and art and stuff like that, and I enjoy old things very much. And I just kept seeing all these references and vectors that were modern, you know, I was just shocked to see that this was still valued the same way it was in the past.
Yeah, that's right.
And that I don't know. I just never grew up thinking about the occult in being the force that it is. I mean, it's kind of hidden from, at least growing up in the United States, it's, you're sheltered from that, even though it's there.
That's right. It's hidden in plain sight, as I say.
Yeah, if you visit Washington, D.C. when you're a kid and you wonder what all the scary statues are or whatever, you wonder. I remember visiting there as a child myself and wondering why a lot of the things were they, and then you're just told it's to respect the people who invented democracy.
Right, right.
Basically, is the short version of what you're given.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Well, Court, let's begin to round things up here for this time. Again, I've really enjoyed having you back on the program and talking more about your theories and hearing things from your perspective. It's been very interesting. How is, again, to round things up here, when do you think the book is going to be available? Are you in the last working stages of it now, or is it still far off? What do you think?
No, it's going to be very close. I'm through writing it. I'm just going through some edits and checking things out and adding and deleting a few things that aren't necessary. Or I have two people helping me edit it, and they're looking at stuff too. So it'll be really soon. And actually, I just tried to email you an advanced copy, and I couldn't load the whole thing in an email, so I'll try to give you a couple.
I'll break it into two emails
and get that off to you here later today.
Perfect. We can talk more about that after the show here, Court. But again, the website, of course, or the blog is survivalcell.blogspot.com. Go there, check it out. Court also has a YouTube channel with some videos up there for you to enjoy and dig into. Check out Google Earth as well, of course, and draw up some of these lines that we've been talking about if you're interested. It's really, really easy with these tools that we have today. It's been really good having you on back on the program, Court. Let's have you back again on here soon and talk about some of the more discoveries that you're doing, because you're continuing your work, right? And you're going to just scrape the tip of the iceberg here, it seems like.
Oh, there's just so much that we can go. I'm gonna start moving east and look at the Islamic world and more of China, which is really interesting. I was telling you last time how the Olympic park there was a raid, and then after I told you that, I realized that it sits right on the 40th parallel. They raid it sitting right on the 40th, and then it points exactly to the Forbidden City.
How about that, huh?
So it's all the China. They have the pyramids. They have arrays of things you wouldn't believe there. It's like they might even have been the progenitors of the whole concept, and I'm going to start looking into that.
All right. Very interesting. Much more to come then. Court, thank you very much again for your time today. Really enjoyed it. Take it easy, and we will talk more soon, okay?
Hey, thanks for having me, and just everybody keep listening to Red Ice Radio. Appreciate it.
That's our show with Court Lindahl. Great to have you with us. My thanks to Fredrik and Elizabeth and everyone who's making Red Ice what it is. We'll be back on Thursday with Alfred Weber. We have a really interesting program about the October NASA bombing of the moon. We'll talk with Alfred about this from a exopolitics perspective. There are some researchers who have suggested that there's extraterrestrial structures and even potential ongoing ET activity on the moon. If so, how the heck will this affect the peace in our solar system? Why is NASA even doing this? We're going to talk about all this stuff with Alfred Weber. It's going to be really interesting, so don't miss our program this coming Thursday. I hope you enjoyed our program here today. Thank you very much for being a member. My name is Henrik. Take it easy, and we will talk more soon.